In a world filled with spyware, ransomware, phish, and more, we need you to be the hero. In this podcast, Information Protection and Security is bringing new ways to fight back against the dangerous actors looking to do digital and physical harm. We'll give you everything you need to know on a different topic of risk every month. Coming to you from IPS with Love.
Welcome. I'm Lisa Waddle.
And I'm John Nekrasov.
And we are going to talk about a nutty story today of a worker who was fooled out of $25 million by a meeting full of deepfakes. We'll also have an interview with HCA Healthcare's product security expert on supply chain attacks and how those are increasing in healthcare. But first, we have to talk about the news that's been dominating the healthcare industry for the last few weeks.
That's exactly right. So on February 21st, Change Healthcare was hit by a cyber attack. Now, you've probably not necessarily heard of Change Healthcare before.
I had not.
I definitely had not either. Yeah. But it's a unit owned by United Healthcare, which is the nation's largest health insurance provider. And for context, Change Healthcare processes basically around a third of U.S. patient records every year, which, according to tech website TechCrunch. So, you know, they have their hands in a lot of different places, right? This breach happened and millions of Americans' health information was breached. That's around 6 terabytes of data.
Terabytes. Okay. Wow. That's
so
a lot.
Not megabytes, terabytes. So this is a huge deal. And there have been repercussions in the healthcare industry basically since that time. Drug prescription orders were disrupted for thousands of pharmacies across the country, especially in that first week. It impacted claims, transmittals, and payments, and healthcare companies have been losing money hand over fist since then. So we kind of want to talk through basically sort of what happened, kind of give you a little bit of background on how this breach occurred, who did it, and also kind of what it tells us about the healthcare industry at large. But, you know, we see ransomware attacks pretty regularly in this space and other spaces. Why is this not just another ransomware attack that's just bigger?
Right, that's right. And it comes down to scope, right? The American Hospital Association actually wrote a letter to Congress after this Change attack and called it the most significant attack in U.S. healthcare history. So talking about number of records, number of people affected, nothing on this scale has happened before. And so when we were looking at the story, we were also seeing how it's really an example of how the industry works in many levels, right? So who's to blame for this?
Yeah, so it's always kind of hard to know at first when this happens. If someone doesn't claim it immediately, you know, a ransomware gang will often try to breach a company and then obviously basically they'll encrypt the data of that company, encrypt their systems potentially, and basically stop them from operating until they've paid money to get it back. So sometimes, you know, they may not go super public with that initially because they're trying to get money out of the company. So all this information that we're going to talk about is public at this point. So in the few weeks since this incident first happened, since Change Healthcare shut their systems down and said, like, a cyber attack in some form has happened. First, they said that it was a nation state potentially that breached them. But eventually it came out, United Healthcare publicly in a statement blamed the ransomware group Black Hat / Alfie, it's also known as, which also claimed responsibility in a now deleted message. And what's interesting about Black Hat is they're kind of a great example of sort of how the modern ransomware basically business works. They provide services to basically smaller cyber gangs that will then use their ransomware technology to get into companies, take the money out, and they basically split the revenue together. So these guys are really bad guys, and they're now targeting healthcare on a level that we've never seen before.
Yeah, you know, Black Hat, I know we're both pet lovers, but these guys are hardly cuddly and cute, right? They are notorious for being ruthless and for going after the money. And, you know, much like bank robbers who go to banks because that's where the money is, these guys are going to healthcare because they know that's where the valuable data is and that's where they can make a difference in shutting down operations, right, costing possibly people's lives, and it seems that they don't really care. which also is an example of as you were saying, this professionalization mm-hmm. of ransomware. These are not, when we talk about hackers, these are not just people one-on-one at home doing things. These guys are organized, and they act in a professional way, as if this mm-hmm. is their job, right?
Well, I think it's interesting, you know, you use that word organized. I think in many ways you can kind of connect this to organized crime in the way that we like traditionally think of it in, you know, mafia movies and whatever.
Right, nothing right? new there.
There's nothing new. That's something that we've seen throughout the 20th century, right, and obviously into the 21st century. But what we're seeing here is that, you know, there were certain things in industries that organized crime would target, right, with the drug trade or something else. Mm-hmm. But often they would kind of have, like, a code of certain things that they would go after and certain things that they wouldn't go after within a society because they were part of the society at the same time. What we're seeing here is, I mean, you have cyber criminals who are living often in places like Russia or North Korea. The group Black Hat is considered to have a lot of Russian ties, even though we don't necessarily know where everyone is based within that group. But, you know, they're not in our communities, and so they don't really care about who they're impacting. To them, it's just, you know, what can I paralyze to make the most possible money, right? Mm-hmm. And so we see, I don't know, we're seeing that here, right, where you're literally jeopardizing the health of millions of people across the country. I don't know, do you want to talk about a little bit of the background of Black Hat? Because I think that also kind of gives us an indication of sort of where this story is going in particular.
I think so, because, you know, when we look into the roots of Black Hat, it's only been around for a year and a half, right, mm-hmm. 2 years. But it's not brand new, right?
Right.
It's believed, and these are all kind of believed, because sometimes some of this news comes from Black Hat or comes from the criminals, and it's how much do you trust the criminals or believe them. This might be the story they're putting forward. But it's believed to have formed from other cyber gangs, right? And Black Hat's roots are believed to have been some of the people that were involved in the Colonial Pipeline shutdown, mm-hmm. right? Which that was something I think that also affected a lot of people in a lot of ways. If you remember, there were gas shortages. There was real panic of how are we going to get this back online? But then we did actually have some good news in the fall. Just in December, the FBI released the encryption key for that Black Hat was using. So the idea was they maybe were encrypting some data, but the FBI said, well, we can unencrypt that for you. You don't have to worry about paying the ransom. And it seemed like the good guys were winning or won one, right, in December. So what happened?
Right. So, I mean, literally 4 months later, right after that shutdown had happened, Black Hat is right back active. And it's interesting because we just had in February the Lockbit gang, which is another famous mm-hmm. Cybercrime gang, had a similar takedown. And so this is something the FBI is constantly – the FBI and other, you know, security agencies around the world are constantly trying to target these gangs. But I think the fact that this attack happened so soon after Black Hat got sort of quote-unquote shut down shows how difficult this whole process is. It's like almost like – I think about like playing whack-a-mole, you know, where you hit one target and you're like, oh, I got this gang. But, I mean, they're all on their computers. They're in different places. You know, you can't – especially if they're based in Russia, you can't just go into the country and shut them down, right? Because mm-hmm. our authorities don't have the power to do that right now. So what's interesting, though, is the next kind of layer of this Change Healthcare story.
Yeah, it doesn't end there, right?
It does not
end
there.
That's the interesting thing. It's still developing. So talk about what's happened as far as we believe that Change did pay a ransom, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. So according to Wired, it seems like in Bitcoin wallets that are connected to Black Hat, a $22 million fee came into those wallets, which seems to indicate, you know, Change Healthcare has not confirmed this, it's important to say, but it seems to indicate that they may have paid a ransom payment. So you kind of have two things there. One is that, you know, we really – paying ransoms is not great.
Right. That doesn't seem to be a best practice, right? Because the idea is you can't trust a criminal. And maybe they'll give you an encryption key. Maybe it won't work. Maybe mm-hmm. they'll give the encryption key and still put all your data for sale, right? So it seems best practice is not to pay that ransom.
Right. Well, and it also encourages them to say, oh, you know, I'm going to get a ransom.
I'm going to get a payday. Yeah.
I'm going to get a payday if I take over this mm-hmm. healthcare company's systems. Mm-hmm. But the other interesting thing is after that payment went into their systems, Black Hat shut down their entire operation, like their website. And it came out that essentially one of their affiliates, the group that basically used their code to get into Change Healthcare, mm-hmm. wanted obviously part of the money. Black Hat, however, took all the ransom mm. money and then basically shut out the group that had actually done the crime mm-hmm. and has now seems to have like disappeared into thin air. And this is basically how Black Hat was formed previously when we talked about when they mm-hmm. attacked the Colonial Pipeline. They had actually operated basically under a different name, shut down, took all their money in like an exit scam, and then mm-hmm. now seem to be doing it again. And so it's like a really prime example of how hard it is to actually stop these gangs from, you know, moving the money around.
Yeah.
And actually, like, just do anything concrete.
Well, and it just shows you can't trust them,
right?
That they have ripped off these people that they were actually working with, it sounds like. So they are shape-shifting. Mm-hmm. We don't really know what's going to happen next. I mean, very similar to a cat, 9 lives. We'll see how many lives Black Cat actually has, right?
Very much so.
Well, and this kind of leads into another clever spoof that happened earlier this year, too. In Hong Kong, there was a deep fake having to do with just a worker in a finance area who was emailed by his or her CFO and asked to transfer some money. Mm-hmm. And the worker was skeptical, as we all should be when we're asked to transfer a lot of money kind of on the down low, right? So what happened next is what makes this a really crazy story, mm-hmm. Right? This CFO said, okay, let's jump on a conference call. The worker does see their CFO and also sees other directors that this person recognized, has met before, and is then instructed to transfer what ends up being like $25 million. And all of those people on the conference call were deepfakes. Mm. And what does that mean, a deepfake? I mean, explain to us a little bit, too, how that works.
Yeah. So a deepfake is basically someone will take your likeness, whether visually or your voice. You can do it either way. And then they'll run it through an AI system. And then that AI system will take your face and your voice, and it'll generate either basically a duplication of your voice or a duplication of your face and your voice. Mm-hmm. So in this scenario, it literally made basically like fake videos of executives in this person's company, duplicated their voices, and then put them all on a conference call with this person. They're just talking to robots mm-hmm. the whole time. And it's just kind of mind-blowing, right? Because like, this employee seemed to do the right thing to start off. Like, you know, we always talk about verify.
Be skeptical.
Verify. Yeah. And so they were like, okay, I am going to get on a call. I'm obviously not with these people in person, so mm-hmm. I'm going to do the next best thing and make sure that my executives actually want this. And that's exactly what he did. And then he still got it wrong. Mm-hmm. She still got it wrong. And, you know, I think that's what's so strange and also like funny about this story, right? Like, can you imagine jumping on a call with your coworkers and then like none of them being real?
Right. And I mean, this was not then uncovered till like a week later when that worker contacted people in the office and said, you know, you wanted me to do this. And they said, no, we never authorized that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really a great lesson as we enter an election year here in the U.S. That you can't really believe everything you hear or see. Mm-hmm. And it really pays to be skeptical.
Right. Yeah, I think the big takeaway is just that in all circumstances like this where you're dealing with financial data or you need to deal with sensitive information of any kind, you know, you need to initiate basically communications with anyone that you want to verify communication, mm-hmm. verify a transaction with, and take that initiative and make sure that you use contact information that you've verified on your own is safe. Because if someone calls you, you know, it may sound like them, but whether it's, you know, your CFO or your mom, either it may not actually be them. And that's just the reality of the world we live in, as strange as it sounds.
Scary times.
It is very weird.
Got to be careful.
It makes me uncomfortable. But
me too.
Yeah, so Lisa actually wrote up a story on this on the Shield blog, which you can go to learn more about this story and also how to protect yourself from deepfake scams. But first, Lisa actually spoke to Matthew Webb, HCA Healthcare's product security expert, and so we're going to listen to that now.
Great. Let's take a listen.
We're talking now with Matthew Webb, AVP of Product Security at HCA Healthcare, and he's going to talk to us about supply chain attacks. Welcome, Matthew.
Lisa, thank you very much.
Well, we've been hearing lots in the news lately about supply chain attacks, but everyone might not know what those are. Can you explain a little bit?
Yeah, I'll be happy to. So supply chain, the typical thought about supply chain is, right, this idea of transportation. We think of shipping and railway and, you know, resources that we're mining and then turning those into products. For us, right, we see supply chain as technology as well. So, for instance, with the most recent event that we've been dealing with, that was through a remote access service. Now, we didn't always have that for our services, but some of our providers do. So think of clinical providers like radiology or cardiology or neurology. Mm-hmm. They're specialists in a practice, but they use technology as well to provide services. So they've got their third parties who may have these solutions. So when we think about the supply chain, even in technology, it really is that horizontal distribution of those services where it's a provider providing services for a provider that we have to be aware of.
Yeah. You mentioned the recent events. I mean, one of the scariest things about these supply chain attacks is it happens not to your company, but to somebody else. But the effects it has are so broad, right? In this case, it's the patients, the healthcare provider, the suppliers. So can you describe how high the stakes are in supply chain attacks?
It's huge, right? And it's because these are so connected, right? And using an example of like SolarWinds, if you would, I think everybody's familiar with that one. You know, the attackers were able to breach SolarWinds as an organization and as a product. Well, SolarWinds was used by thousands of companies. Those attackers were then able to hit one entry point and then fan out over all of those connections that SolarWinds had. So think about everything that's on the other side of that connection, patients, financial data, or personal data. Attackers only have to hit one time and then have, you know, that distributed capability to attack all those organizations using that service.
Yeah, you know, for someone like me who likes to have control over things, supply chain attacks are so frightening because we can't do healthcare ourselves, right? We have to rely on these third parties, but they are third parties. We can't tell them what to do. We can't control their systems. And we can't deliver care, great healthcare, all by ourselves, right? So what's the key to balancing risk with this reliance on suppliers?
For me, it's about partnerships, right? And it's opening up those doors for more transparency. Obviously, you mentioned it, and we see it in our organization that our success is dependent on these third parties. Likewise, for security, we're depending on having those third parties help us understand what their challenges are, what services they're using, what products they're using, so that we can be better aware. Gone are the days where we could do deep dive assessments for everything in that flow, right? We just don't have enough human resources to go after that. So we have to leverage those third parties, much like we are for services, but also from a security perspective as well.
Mm. And I think you've talked about, too, how because we rely on them, they are a part of, the suppliers are become a part of our care, right? There can't be an adversarial relationship of you did this, you caused this problem. So it really is about the relationship, the partnership. And one of the things I know you're doing in your third-party management program here at HCA is you have to prioritize the highest risk. Because as you said, there's really so much and there's so many suppliers, we can't go after them all equally. So how do you figure out, how to go about the program and prioritizing those risks?
A lot of it is just listening to our business, right? Understanding the needs of the business, understanding what the directions they're heading in. So, you know, revenue cycle obviously mm-hmm. bubbled up this last couple of weeks. So that's a prioritization for us. Data transmissions, right? So a lot of it is we've got to be able to adjust and be flexible with what the business is telling us, as well as understanding the industry, right? Mm. We've got to have just as much of a partnership with our third-party suppliers as with the business to understand what we believe are concerns and risk and share that with the business and get their understanding of what their concerns are as well.
So yeah, as we talk about risk, you know, the easy decision or the obvious decision would be like, well, if a third party is having a problem, let's just disconnect from them. But that's not so simple in healthcare, right? How does that decision get made?
Not very lightly, I will be honest, right? There's a lot of folks that have to come together and understand the implications of what we're seeing from an attack, right? What really is that likelihood that if we don't take action, that we will be compromised as well? We also have to balance that with when we do shut that connection off or that service off, what is impacting in the delivery of care, right? Obviously, we've got some lower priority systems that are probably easier to make that answer with of what to turn on and turn off. But that decision can't be taken lightly. If this is a critical supplier for, let's say, urgent care, right, and we've got patients sitting there waiting to be seen, having to divert those patients out to go somewhere else is impactful for the organization, mm-hmm. right? It's brand reputation, it's financial, but we've got to balance that with what's the likelihood that we get compromised and we see that thing spread through the environment, and then we have mm-hmm. to take other actions to shut other services down.
Right, that's a tough line.
Because,
yeah, as you say, it can be obvious if it's urgent care, if it's the emergency room, right, people coming in with terrible injuries. But even I know the discussions have been around imaging, which you think wouldn't be that big a deal, but think about, you know, a person who's waiting on an image to see if they have cancer or if their cancer has spread, and to suddenly say, well, we gotta put you off a week or however long, or we have to send you to another place. It can be so impactful on the individual.
Impactful on the patient, impactful on our clinical caregivers, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, our teams that are providing those radiology services, right, having to shift and reprioritize and reschedule those events. And as you mentioned, it's one thing when a patient is really concerned about a cancer diagnosis, you know, diagnosis potentially. But what about the patients that are sitting there in the urgent care or emergency room and we're waiting to get an image to find out where, you know, how to reset a bone, mm-hmm. right? Those are even more impactful because it's in that direct line of need at that time.
Right, right. So yeah, high risk stuff and really big decisions that have to be made.
It is, and you know, we're security practitioners by trade, right? We want to protect the organization. We're healthcare as well, and we've got to consider that balance of what that risk is from a security perspective and the impacts that it has on just our healthcare operations as well.
Well, that was super interesting, Lisa. I think that, you know, when we were talking about Change Healthcare earlier, you know, we talked about what it's like when a healthcare company gets breached and how serious that is. And I think what Matthew talked about kind of points to both the work that we do here at HCA to protect our company and also the risks that we're dealing with all the time.
Yeah, and you know, we've got a lot more information online where people can read about how to protect themselves, how to protect their companies, and how to stay safe out there. There's plenty more content that we're going to be covering every month on From IPS with Love, so make sure to tune in. Thanks.